are now listening to the Music Matters Media Podcast with your host, Lisa Hollihan. A show made to bridge the gap between mainstream musicians and artists on the rise. Discovering up-and-coming musicians and discussing all things music. Don't forget to follow us on social media.
What's going on, Music Matters Media family? Today we have an extremely special episode for you guys. It's going to be tugging on every heartstring of mine and Eric's. We are talking about Heaven and Hell, the eighth and final studio album by the Canadian rock band Sum 41. This record was number one on my most anticipated albums of 2024. I know it also made Eric's list as well in the beginning of the year this year. And here we finally are, March 29th of 2024, this album was released. We have a double album on our hands here, with disc one being the Heaven side. Side A, we have 10 tracks. And then following, we have disc two, side B, the Hell side, with also 10 tracks. The Heaven side being the pop punk side, a tribute to the pop punk side of Sum 41, and the Hell side being the metal side, a tribute to the heavy metal aspects of Sum 41 as well. Altogether, packaged for us, tied with a bow, being their final send-off of their discography.
Honestly, every day leading up to this album was just an emotional roller coaster, just from the moment they announced it till now. The emotions just haven't stopped. And then, of course, when it dropped and listening to it, and, you know, even in the final minutes preparing for today, for this podcast, oh man, I've been through it all to put it succinctly and lightly. But as far as send-offs go, I just want to get this out of the way now. Sum 41 went out on the highest note possible, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I 100% agree with you on that, Eric. I mean, we have a lot to get to here today, so, you know, we will dig deeper and explain why that is. But I think that, wow, holy crap, man. I mean, what a way to go. What a way to go.
Absolutely. And I'm not kidding when I say this. It is difficult. Difficult in all caps to find something to dislike about this album. Because, I mean, just from each side, from start to finish, is just so freaking amazing and just so all out.
Because there's so much material here that they are sending us off with, I figured it would only be fair to give justice to both sides separately. So for the first half of this podcast, we are going to be focusing on side one, which is the Heaven side, the pop punk side of this record. And then the latter half, the second half of this episode, will be dedicated to the Hell side. And we will be reviewing the more heavy metal aspects of Sum 41. And with that being said, let's just jump right into it on the Heaven side. So Eric, what were your overall thoughts of the Heaven side going into it, listening to this record for the first time and then afterwards with repeated listens?
So when I first started listening to this album, like literally in the moments before I hit play on the first song, so many emotions are rushing through my head. And due to the band's history with 13 Voices and with Order in Decline, I was excited but cautiously optimistic because this is their last album, and I just really, really wanted this album to just, you know, impact me in such a way that I would never forget it and I'd go back to it again and again and again. So I wasn't sure really what to expect. So when I hit play on the first song, immediately I was just transported back to their earliest material, with All Killer, No Filler, Half Hour of Power. From the very first song, Waiting on a Twist of Fate, it's classic Sum 41. In my opinion, this is the most Blink-182 song they've had in a while. It was just a punch to the face in terms of pop punk. It immediately filled me with nostalgia for their earliest hits. And once I was done listening to that song, I kind of said to myself, okay, I'm definitely in for a wild ride for the rest of this album.
Ain't that the truth? That's so true.
But then the immediate question after listening to Waiting on a Twist of Fate, at least with the Heaven Side, was, will this hold up? Will the rest of the album be
The same
like
quality.
this? Yes, will it be as consistent? Will it be as strong? And I can honestly say that, with every song that I listened to after that, it definitely made good on that premise. Landmines, my opinion, very reminiscent of the Underclass Hero album, as well as Chuck. And the song Future Primitive, which probably my favorite off of Heaven. I just absolutely love the hardcore punk aspect of it. I
Nice.
love that made a comeback. So I will say this about the Heaven Side. Yes, it is very much a pop punk retrospective, but it's not straight pop punk.
Definitely not just straight pop punk. Of course, pop punk for the Heaven Side is the overarching theme and undertone. However, with tracks like Future Primitive, which I knew that you would love, that's actually more heavier leaning. So there's elements there of straight up punk. There's also heavier elements there. And then also you have a track like Johnny Libertine, which is just a straight punk song, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love that song.
They definitely have experimentation throughout and sprinkles of different elements. Same thing with Radio Silence. I wouldn't consider that a straight up pop punk song either.
Yeah, absolutely not. You can definitely tell that it's a mix of alternative as well as elements of pop punk. So I do love that they mixed all of their best sounds from the past.
Yeah, exactly. You have elements of pop punk and straight punk and hardcore, and you have elements of alternative rock music. And those different styles that are sprinkled throughout can be seen on tracks like Future Primitive and Bad Mistake and Johnny Libertine and Radio Silence. So, yes, you have some straight up pop punk bangers on here, which we'll get to, but pop punk may be the overarching theme, but it's not just a straight up pop punk record on the Heaven Side either. So I do enjoy that because it really keeps you on your toes throughout listening, and you can enjoy the different experimentation from song to song without the whole thing sounding like one continuous pop punk song.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that. And what I love about this particular album and what they did with the Heaven Side is that, not only do they keep things fresh and they keep things varied with the different styles that they have on here, but like you said before at the beginning, it serves as a tribute to, every place they've been, sonically speaking. I love that it definitely serves as a retrospective of some of the most important and vital moments of their career. Because when you listen to songs like Waiting on a Twist of Fate or Landmines or Future Primitive or Dopamine or Not Quite Myself, it's impossible to not think of classic albums such as All Killer No Filler, Does This Look Infected, Chuck, and Underclass Hero, which are clearly the classics of the Sum 41 discography, as any hardcore fan of theirs knows. So I really do love that they went this way instead of, like you said, just having everything bleed into each other, because then it would have made for too bland of an album.
I have to say that I was quite impressed with the Heaven Side in how diverse it is and just how much they're paying a tribute to their classic albums, as you just said. And I even made notes on certain songs of what some of these songs, the influence reminded me of. For me, the intro song, Waiting on a Twist of Fate, was just such a rush of energy and such a great choice for an intro on this record because it really helped brace the listener of what was to come for the rest of the album. Just such a high energy track, very much in your face, super aggressive, super punk, super skate punk as well. It reminded me of a track that could be lifted off of Does This Look Infected? And that made me super excited and gave me high expectations for the rest of the album. And then some other notes I made here. Landmines. This song is definitely a classic sounding Sum 41 song when it comes to pop punk, because this song is pop punk through and through. And I completely understand why they chose this as a lead single off of The Heaven Side. And then we have I Can't Wait. And I Can't Wait is one of my favorite tracks, if not my favorite track off of The Heaven Side. And that's because this track quite literally can be lifted off of All Killer No Filler. And this was such a nod to their debut album. I Can't Wait sounds like it could have been made in the early 2000s. That really took me back and it felt like a nostalgic track. It was such a weird feeling listening to it because obviously we're getting brand new material from the band and yet it felt like such a nostalgia trip listening to this track. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling before while listening to music where it sounds so familiar to you and you could have sworn that you've heard it before, but you're getting that brand new excitement with having the new material to listen to.
Hell yeah. It feels like no time has passed at all, right? Between All Killer, No Filler and Heaven and Hell. I 100% agree. That's exactly how I felt listening to Waiting on a Twist of Fate, which in my opinion reminds me of the song Underclass Hero. It definitely has that same energy to it. Landmines and I Can't Wait. And even Time Won't Wait. 100% All Killer, No Filler songs. They very well could have been comfortably placed on that album. For all we know, who knows, maybe Derek saved some riffs and put them on this album, or, you know, his songwriting abilities are just so finely tuned that he can transport himself back into that mindset and, like I just said, write songs as if he was still the age he was when he wrote All Killer, No Filler. It really is impressive just how not only nostalgic this album is, but just timeless it feels at times, because it really does feel like, you know, we went back in time in a way. And you're right, it is a weird feeling, but it's an amazing feeling to just be able to spot those little Easter eggs and references that are sprinkled throughout this album. For me personally, songs like Future Primitive and Johnny Libertine remind me of songs like Welcome to Hell from Chuck, which is my personal favorite album. So that was really fun to, you know, keep an ear out for, as well as, you know, of course, everything else that that we so generously got throughout The Heaven Side.
Yeah, I think that whether these are some riffs and lyrics from The Vault that just never saw the light of day from back then, or if he just sat down and tapped into his youth, it's just extremely impressive, in my opinion. Because I will say this, the thing that made me most concerned going into this concept album, you have The Heaven Side that's pop punk, you have The Hell Side that's heavy metal. Great concept. However, I was worried that they were going to put so much emphasis sticking to a pop punk formula and sticking to a heavy metal formula for each of these sides that after a while, it was going to get monotonous and boring and basic and just very samey and repetitive throughout. And I am so pleasantly surprised that that's not what we got here at all. And we'll get to The Hell Side, as I said before. But as for The Heaven Side, just love that they just paid such a homage to every classic era that they had in their discography with these songs. Waiting on a Twist of Fate, Landmines, I Can't Wait, even going into Time Won't Wait, feels so nostalgic and really proves to me and to everybody else that listens to this record that Derek and the rest of the band haven't lost their touch at all when it comes to pop punk music. And that's saying a lot, because in the latter half of their discography, especially in recent years, within the past 10 years, when it comes to Order and Decline and 13 Voices, and even with Screaming Bloody Murder, those don't delve into pop punk tracks like previous records do. Those are heavier records, and they're more influenced by heavy metal and aspects of metal and alternative and alt rock and music that is in that type of vein. So revisiting pop punk music, they really had to take things back to where they started, back to their roots, to tap into that kind of music. So I was a little bit concerned going into this concept record that it was going to be super corny, because the emphasis was going to be more on this has to be straight pop punk and this has to be straight heavy metal, and focus too and lean too far into that, whereas they actually gave each track its own space on the record. And I absolutely love that, because you have such highlights throughout. You go from pop punk and skate punk to just straight up punk rock to a heavier type of hardcore type of element and alternative rock type of sound. Because then going into Future Primitive, that also reminded me of Does This Look Infected. It's a heavier, it has pop punk elements to it, but it also has a heavier side to that track. Then you have a track like Dopamine, which I was impressed that Derek could write and record a track like this present day, because it's very much the modern sounding pop punk music of today, where the up-and-coming musicians and musicians that are more catered to Gen Z, this is how the more modern-sounding pop-punk music sounds today. And the track Dopamine fits right into that type of sound. So that was equally impressive to me, because, as I said, with the first 3 to 4 tracks, those are straight-up nostalgic-sounding tracks where he tapped into All Killer No Filler, Does This Look Infected, but then he can also tap into present day and what the modern landscape of how pop punk sounds on a track like Dopamine, and that to me is equally as impressive.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned Dopamine, because A, it's one of my absolute favorites off of this album, and B, you're 100% right in that it does sound different when you hear it. Sure, there are moments throughout the song where you can kind of make callbacks to their previous material, but for the most part, it definitely sounds like new territory for them.
Yeah, we're both on agreeance to that and how it's completely new sounding to me. Listening to a track like Dopamine, it's something that is new territory for Sum 41. It doesn't sound like anything else in their discography, in my opinion.
Yeah, same. There are moments where you hear Derek sing a certain way or you hear a certain guitar riff, and you can appreciate that, you know, maybe some things kind of sound a bit like, you know, their previous albums. But for the most part, 99% of the song is definitely new territory for them. And I was really pleasantly surprised to hear that, you know, even though this was their Last Goodbye and the album was full of nostalgia, I was very pleasantly surprised to hear that they're still capable of giving us surprises like a song like Dopamine.
Yeah, I love the fact that even though that this is a send-off record, that they're still trying new things and they're not afraid to continue to experiment even throughout their last record.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just them going through memory lane for the sake of doing it. You know, they're also showing us, you know, if we wanted to, we could still very much make a modern pop punk record, and this is what it would sound like.
Exactly. And then with the more heavier and experimental pop punk songs on here, we have Future Primitive, which to me sounds like Does This Look Infected. We have Not Quite Myself, which to me sounds like Screaming Bloody Murder. We have Bad Mistake, and we have Johnny Libertine. Johnny Libertine and Radio Silence, both very different sonically, but both to me sound like they could be lifted off of Underclass Hero. Johnny Libertine, straight up punk song. It's a track that's super rough, super raw, super aggressive. I love that they still have that in them as well. And with Radio Silence, I mean, wow, what a way to close out the heaven side of this record, because from Waiting on a Twist of Fate as the opener and Radio Silence as the closer, to me, I think it was a genius move to put these songs where they're at. It just perfectly wrapped up everything on the heaven side. I will say this too, I'm so incredibly grateful that they gave us a double album to send us off with, and to have both sides of Sum 41 sonically and what their music has had to offer throughout their entire career. However, if they just gave us a heaven side, or if they just gave us a hell side, I would have been equally as pleased with that. And that also says a lot, that to me, quality wise, you have two very well developed sides here. It wasn't just a throwaway, here's the concept, here's some tracks here, here's some tracks there, and that nothing sounds cohesive and they're just a bunch of throwaway tracks. I think that they actually took a considerable amount of time to piece each side together and to really find out what would make the most sense of what songs go where, and to create a very wide scope of what they've had to offer as a band throughout their entire career, which that is such a huge feat to tackle and to take on. We're talking about a band that has had, at this point, 20 plus, 30 plus years of being together making music. So to try to fit that all in together and to tie that all in together for fans, incredibly hard. And I can't believe that they were able to accomplish it at the same time. So that needs to be said.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, because they could have very well just said, let's just try to be experimental for our last album, or let's just try and tread new ground and leave it at that. But the fact that they gave us a double album's worth of everything they know that we, the fans, love to death, and the fact that they tried their absolute best to make it sound like a labor of love really does say so much about them. And I sincerely thank them for going the way they did, because as you know, whenever a band tries to put a pin on their career, any number of things could go wrong or anything like that. And the fact that everything went just right, I honestly couldn't have asked for better results than what we've gotten so far, because of course, we are about to delve into the hell side to discuss how we each felt about that.
Yeah, they very well could have just ended their career on an experimental note and left it at that. Or they could have just kept going down the path that they were going on with heavy metal music and metal music in general and alternative rock music in general. They didn't have to go back to their pop punk roots at all. But I am so incredibly thankful that they did. We got some major fan service on this record. And before we close out our thoughts on the heaven side, I do want to get to some critiques. I do want to get to a least favorite of both of ours. Then we can pick our favorites. And then we will move on over to the hell side. So before we move on over to the hell side, do you have any critiques on the heaven side? And if you do, what are they? And what would be your least favorite track on the heaven side?
So if I had to give one critique from the heaven side, it would be the lyrics. While I do think that the lyrics on this album are an improvement over Order and Decline, because they do keep things simple, they do return to their roots in regards to the subjects they talk about on this album, at the same time, I do feel like a lot of the songs kind of deal with the same concept. Maybe that's just me, but that's how I felt when I listened to it. I feel like a lot of them kind of rehash the same themes, and that just kind of got boring at times. I wish that they would have had a little bit more variety.
That's a good point. To be honest with you, I didn't even think of that as a point, but that is a good point.
Yeah, but you know, lyrically, I can forgive it for being that way. Do you know what I mean? Because the music is just so fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just so fantastic that, you know, in this case, lyrics to me personally aren't really a deal breaker, at least not as big as, you know, they would have been a couple albums ago. But Yeah, that's my only personal critique.
So with that being said, what is your least favorite track on the Heaven side and why?
Please don't hit me for this. It would probably be Radio Silence just because it's so stylistically different than the songs before it.
I don't hate you for it.
I'm not going to say that the album comes to a screeching halt when it gets to Radio Silence, but it definitely is a bit of a speed bump because every song prior to that is just such an all-out, wave of energy, and then you get to Radio Silence and it's like this weird break in the action.
I will say, Eric, to your point, it doesn't help that they put Johnny Libertine, which is the fastest punk song, right before it either.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a polar opposite, so it feels weird. And that's why that song is my personal least favorite.
I definitely really enjoy this track, but I can understand why it feels so jarring to you in comparison to the other tracks off of this record, because for the most part, you're getting high energy tracks throughout. And as you said, with Radio Silence, you come to a screeching halt and it becomes more of a ballad that it does pick up in tempo and it does create this grand finale sonically throughout the song. But to start out, to go from Johnny Libertine, which is a straight up punk rock song, and to go from that type of energy to Radio Silence, it can be quite the contrast. So I understand where you're coming from. I understand why you chose this as a least favorite.
Yeah, as I think by itself, it's definitely elegant. That's the word I'd use for it. It's definitely good as a finale, but maybe it's a finale that could have been on Screaming Bloody Murder or 13 Voices. For this kind of album, I feel like a different sound would have been more appropriate. And what about you? What are your critiques and what's your least favorite on the Heaven side?
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to ask you for the same grace for you not to hate me after I go over some of my critiques. But first things first, I will say that for me, my least favorite track is a toss up between Time Won't Wait and Dopamine. And I'll explain why. So, with Time Won't Wait, I understand why people enjoy it, because it is very reminiscent of the early 2000s, but it's also to me that type of pop punk that I didn't really care for, even at the time, that was more kind of corny leaning, very repetitive, very basic, very standard. To me, this song felt like you would type into an AI program, "Can you write a pop punk song that sounds like early 2000s?" And then this was the result that you would get. When listening to it, not that it's a bad song by any means, but I will say that it's very repetitive, it's very cookie cutter, and it reminds me of that John Feldman. It has that John Feldman touch to it, where back in the California era of Blink, with Skiba being that was his debut, where they just went to the studio, they just wrote songs. John Feldman would push the fact of just write whatever comes to your head and let's record it and let's get it out there. And they didn't really take as much time as they do now as a band, and the process was a whole lot different in general. So for me, I get the appeal of Time Won't Wait because it sounds very early 2000s. However, going throughout the quote unquote wait series here, because I thought that that was funny too. You have Waiting on a Twist of Fate, you have I Can't Wait, and then you have Time Won't Wait. I don't know what Derek was thinking putting all these so close together and just naming them in general if he couldn't come up with anything better than that. But for the sake of this podcast, I will call it the Wait series, and out of the three songs that we got in the Wait series, Time Won't Wait is definitely my least favorite. I would say that I Can't Wait is my top favorite, and Waiting on a Twist of Fate is my second favorite from the quote unquote Wait series. And then going into Dopamine, you're gonna laugh about this, but Dopamine I had such a struggle with because upon first listen and repeated listens, I was like, I cannot stand this at all. I do not like the vibe of this song at all. This is just my personal opinion, of course. But I do give Derek credit for leaning in to the modern sound of pop punk and what it sounds like today. So I do want to give him his flowers there. However, I just can't vibe with this at all because it sounds like a straight up Machine Gun Kelly pop punk song, and I cannot get that out of my head. I keep picturing if he was singing this song, this is a song that can go right off of one of his pop punk records that came out during the pandemic or the follow up to that record. And it's just driving me crazy listening to the song because Derek specifically said that this was a song that he wrote for somebody else, because Derek also, aside from producing this record, which I am going to give him so much kudos for producing this record, and you could tell how much love and thought and just emotion went behind crafting the both Heaven and Hellside. We will get more into that during our final thoughts. But he did not only just produce this record, but he's also a writer and he's also the main lyricist. And he was writing for other artists and bands throughout the pandemic, especially early on. And this was a track that he stated that initially he wrote for somebody else. And he actually ended up liking it so much that he kept it for the band and kind of kept it on the back burner, I guess trying to figure out when would be a good time to release it. And of course, it would have to make sense when he does release it with other music that Sum 41 was doing at the time, because they were doing heavier music. So clearly, this was the time to do it because this is the final send-off. However, there's just a part of me that has the notion that this was supposed to go to Machine Gun Kelly during that era, because the timing makes sense. And the sound and how it sounds sonically and the lyrics, everything just makes sense. And you're going to laugh about this because even though upon first listen, this was an instant, I can't stand this song. For me, it was the song that got into my head the quickest. It was.
It does, right?
This song was an earworm. This song, I have to say, this song is an earworm through and through, because regardless of whether you love it, you hate it, you're somewhere in between like me. It's not like I absolutely hate it or anything. It's not anything of that nature. It's just more of this was an instant dislike off of this side. However, it was the fastest song to really seep in with that repetitive chorus. And I could find myself doing things around the house and singing the chorus to myself or having it stuck in my head as I'm doing other things. And I'm like, why? Why is this happening? So I have to give him that. Like, I have to give him that. I have to give him.
You're just like, oh no, it's happening.
I have to give Derek that it's so incredibly catchy. It's so sugary pop, and yes, it's pop punk, but it's more pop leaning, and it just gets in your head, and whether you want it to be there or not, it's there. And I have to give him credit for that, for creating a song that regardless of how the listener feels about it, it's just so damn catchy that once you have those lyrics in your head and that melody, you can be repeating that all day. So Time Won't Wait and Dopamine ultimately made my least favorites from the Heaven side. It was hard to pick one because both of them have aspects for me of what bothers me about pop punk music, to be honest with you, or some pop punk music that comes out. But if I had to pick solely one as a least favorite, I'll go with Time Won't Wait, because I feel like it's more forgettable. And at least that's what Dopamine has going for it, in my opinion, at least. And the last thing that I will say, critique-wise, is neither of us really touched upon this song, but the song Bad Mistake, killer song, and I enjoy it. However, I would enjoy it a million times more if it wasn't a straight-up rip-off of You're Gonna Go Far, Kid by The Offspring. I have to say it. For our younger listeners out there who listen to this album, you might listen to Bad Mistake and not understand at all what the issue is. And how could you, really, if you have no reference point? But type in You're Gonna Go Far, Kid by The Offspring listen to that first, then come back and listen to Bad Mistake by Sum 41, and it's the exact same song, which is wild. It makes sense because I just saw Sum 41 on their last tour over the summer. Technically, it was the Offspring's tour, and then they brought Simple Plan and Sum 41 to open for them on the tour, and I just saw them this past summer, so I think by being around the band, they've also toured with the band before, they're close with the band, The Offspring, and I think by being around the band so much and hearing those songs being played every night, and I think Derek maybe just got some influence there from them, which would have been fine if that was just the case, but to me, it sounds too similar, and even though it's a good song, it's not a great one in my opinion because of that, because it's already been done.
Yeah, listen, to your credit, there have been times when Sum 41 has worn their influences a little too proudly on their sleeves. I'll give an example. It's one of my favorite songs, but I you know, let's call a spade for the sake of doing that. The song The Bitter End from their album Chuck. It's essentially a recreation of the song Battery by Metallica.
Yeah.
Any metalhead listens to the both of them and they'll clearly see the connection. I remember when a friend of mine showed it to me way back when, during my early college days, and that's the first thing I noticed. So, great song, I love it, but I can't listen to it without thinking of Battery, so I can 100% agree with you in the sense that, you know, in regards to Bad Mistake, it would have helped if, you know, they would have toned it down a little bit. And that's a valid critique of that song. And to your point about the other songs, I respect it, and especially in respect to Dopamine, I love that song, but I can totally understand why it's not your favorite in particular. And you're 100% right. As soon as I heard the opening chorus, it got embedded in my brain. And
I'm pretty sure it's their next single, too, on top of everything else that they're going with, for the Heaven side at least. So I know that this is going to be such a polarizing song because it's one of those tracks where people are either going to love it or they're not going to be able to stand this track. And I will, as I said, give him this. It is super catchy. It's such an earworm. It will not get out of my head regardless of how I feel. So there's that.
Yeah, and listen, to be fair, that is a very much a talent. You know, no matter, like, when we think of the songs we love and even the songs we don't like that we've ever heard in our lives, you know, if they're still there years later, it's for a reason. So listen, that in itself is a talent, just to make something that will stay in the collective consciousness for years to come, whether people love it or hate it. So I 100% agree with you that all credit to Derek for making something that is very difficult to get out of your head once you hear it.
Let's get into the highlights, because we got over the criticisms of the Heaven side. Eric, what are some of the highlights for you off of the Heaven side? And what are some of your favorite songs off of the Heaven side? Because, of course, we got to end this on a high note. There's so many good tracks here not to talk about.
If I could give you the whole album, I would, but obviously I'm not going to do that. So definitely Waiting on a Twist of Fate. I mean, how could I not?
Same.
That song is just pure punk through and through.
So good.
Pure pop punk through and through. Landmines.
Yep.
Time Won't Wait. Future Primitive, which is my personal favorite on the Heaven side because it's just so hardcore punk. Dopamine. Not Quite Myself, and Johnny Libertine.
So good, and yeah.
Yeah, I just love how the Heaven side was executed for the most part. And this was totally on repeat for me.
Let me tell you, some of my favorites are Waiting on a Twist of Fate, Landmines, I Can't Wait, Future Primitive, Not Quite Myself, Johnny Libertine, and Radio Silence. With Radio Silence, it really threw me back to Underclass Hero and even Chuck with songs like So Long Goodbye on Underclass Hero and Pieces on Chuck. Just that slower, more stripped down Derek's vocal And I love that they included that on here as well. I love that the heaven side, we didn't even get to the hell side yet. And I love the diversity already that has been shown within the heaven side. And I was very much pleased overall with the sound of the heaven side of this double album. So I do have to shout out to Derek and Brown Sound and Cone and Frank Zumo and Tom Thacker. The band just really gave it their all. And this is just for side one. This is just
for side one.
Now, going from side one to side two, the B-side, the part two, the hell side. We are going straight to hell now, Eric.
Yes, we are.
So let's hear it. What were your overall thoughts of the hell side?
Oh, man, where to start? I mean, if I was excited for the heaven side, I was just as, if not more, excited for the hell side. Order and Decline, great album, great metal-leaning album, but not every moment of it was fantastic.
Right.
So I was really hoping that for this conclusion that they would fine-tune some things to really make this metal album, you know, stick more than Order and Decline did. And boy, did it. At least to me, it did. I mean, wow. From the get-go, the song Rise Up. I mean, well, first, obviously, they get through that interlude.
First things first. We cannot just gloss over the interlude between heaven and hell.
So the interlude, which is pronounced Preparasi a salire, is Italian for get ready to rise up.
I love this track, I have to say. I know that it just serves the purpose as an interlude, but I kind of wish, I'm kind of bittersweet on it, because knowing that this is the last record for Sum 41, and then having a track like this with such experimentation, another track that I would say sounds absolutely nothing like what Sum 41 has ever done before in their catalog, and to have it being executed like this and it sound this good and it makes sense, the combination of this track going into Rise Up, just having those types of experimentation is tremendous and does wonders for the record as a whole and for the hell side and introducing the hell side. So it's bittersweet because I actually ended up loving it so much, and then I got a little sad because I thought to myself, well, this is it. It's not like we can get another record that they experiment more like this on it. I remember pressing play and listening to this for the first time and having to do a double take to make sure that I was still on the right record. And
yeah, for sure.
That just goes to show of how experimental and unpredictable that the band still has something like this that they could give to the world. And once again, as I said with the heaven side, going to the hell side, keep people on their toes, because that is such an extremely difficult thing to do when you're creating a double album. How do we keep listeners and fans engaged throughout and hold their attention for this amount of time? And I think that this was quite the way to do it. And I love the combination of this song going into Rise Up. I think it's genius. And believe it or not, I know a lot of people skip interludes, but I love this song so much and the combo with Rise Up that I play it through every single time.
To your point, it's definitely underrated, and I definitely agree. I love how they showed a transition from heaven into hell. You know, I love the descent that they showed with this mini soundscape. It is bittersweet to hear something like this done at this stage in their lives, or at least in this band's life, because it's like, had we known that they could have done something like this, it would have been cool to hear it on previous albums.
Yeah, right?
Or it would have been cool to get a continuation of it. So it is bittersweet to hear it at this point, but the fact that we even got to hear it at all, I mean, I'll take it.
I'll take honestly. It too, man. I'll take it too, and I'll continue to play it. And the 1-2 punch of this interlude going into Rise Up, to me, incredible work. So kudos to Derek. Kudos to everybody in Sum 41. What a great start. Just like how I feel about Waiting on a Twist of Fate, the intro to the heaven side, this intro, knocked it out of the park as well for the Hellside.
For sure. And speaking of Rise Up, you definitely feel the alternative side of their sound coming through. But then towards the end, there's this breakdown and it just gets even heavier. And that was just so great to hear, the experimentation that that they've got going on in, you know, shifting from one sound to another within the same song.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that that's one thing that they introduced on this album. And this also, you know, kind of sets up the listener for what the rest of the album is going to be like, in the sense that, just like with the Heaven side, the Hell side is also not just a straight metal record.
Yeah, I could not agree more about that. You have so many subgenres of metal sprinkled throughout these tracks that it also keeps the listeners on their toes, whether that be two switch ups in one song or just from song to song, but another great way of keeping people engaged.
Yeah, you've definitely got moments on this album where they toe the line between alternative and metal, where it kind of sounds like it could veer into pop punk, but then it goes just straight into the heavy, crunchy riffs and the heavy breakdowns.
Totally. You have heavy metal, you have alternative metal, you even have aspects of nu metal on here, which is insane to me.
And of course, it has thrash metal, which, as any Sum 41 fan knows, you know, they have an absolute love for. I mean, you've got songs that just go all out.
Shout out to Dave Brownsound, and also shout out to Tom Thacker, because they did such a phenomenal job throughout the whole record, of course, but specifically on the Hellside.
Absolutely. I mean, they together, they made such a formidable duo on this album. And one of them or the other will take a guitar solo. And then there are also songs where they'll both go back and forth, and it just sounds glorious. Again, in all caps, it is amazing.
Yeah, their playing styles are different, but at the same time, they complement each other on these tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also love that on this album, they, you know, kind of do the same thing as with the Heaven side. They manage to tread new territory while also maintaining the nostalgia of albums like Does This Look Infected and Chuck, because you can absolutely hear that on this album. So, for example, the song Stranger in These Times, to me, it reminds me of No Reason.
Yeah, that's a straight up Chuck song. I even wrote that down too.
It is, right?
Yeah.
The song Over the Hedge has a little bit of that too. And it also has a little bit of Kill 'Em All from Metallica, which is arguably one of their most classic albums. Kill 'Em All is a classic, as any, you know, hardcore Metallica fan knows, especially from their early 80s output. And to me, that song is just absolutely reminiscent of that period of thrash metal. I love that Derek can still write riffs like this, because that's truly one of the things that just made me fall in love with Chuck. And I love that he dug deep into his brain to write this particular riff, and to write the riff to You Wanted War, which probably my absolute favorite on this album. I'm surprised it didn't knock my teeth out when I listened to it.
Nice. That was that was a standout track for sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, I just think that the Hell side is just as amazing as the Heaven side. And just like with Heaven, it's impossible to not listen to these and instantly be reminded of some of their most classic moments, and firing on all cylinders and just showing what fantastic experts they are at their instruments. I mean, you know, of course, Tom and Dave are phenomenal all throughout, but if you listen to the songs, if you really pay attention, you have Jason Cohn McCaslin really just holding the rhythm down on his bass. I mean, there are songs where, you know, the bass just sounds so fantastic and so fluid. He's like going everywhere. And of course,
yeah, and shout out to Frank Zumo as well. Yes, man, Frank holding it down on drums like a madman.
Yeah, I mean, playing metal is difficult as it is, and it can be difficult for anybody, but to have those two working together to play all these different styles, and especially on the thrash metal stuff, when they have to really get into that, you know, galloping rhythm, I mean, wow, what a duo, honestly.
And as we were discussing on the Heaven side of the tribute to their previous work with All Killer No Filler, Half Hour of Power, Does This Look Infected, Underclass Hero, even Screaming Bloody Murder. Also on the Hell side, you can hear most of their mid to latter discography, where you have songs that sound like Chuck, you have songs that sound like Screaming Bloody Murder, you have songs that sound like 13 Voices and Order in Decline. So throughout both of these records on this double album, you're really getting a career-spanning sound for the band. So mission accomplished there. And for me, some of my personal standouts on the Hell side, I mean, having songs like Over the Edge, House of Liars, You Wanted War, you have Stranger in These Times, even the closer on this side of the record, How the End Begins, such a bittersweet closer knowing that this is the final record from this band. So, Eric, I know that you're completely gushing over the Hell side, and I definitely understand why. However, do you have any critiques from the Hell side? If you do, what are they? And what ended up being your least favorite track off of this side of the double album?
In terms of critiques, I think really it's the same as for what it was on the Heaven side. I think lyrically, it could have been a little bit more varied. I do appreciate the lyrics, and I do love how sharp they are, how aggressive they are. Certainly, it complements the music. But I do feel like you could have had a little more variety in terms of the subjects. You could have maybe spoken in a more generalized manner about, you know, things like betrayal, anger, alienation, stuff like that. Whereas most of the time, it was really just from a first-person point of view, which, of course, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, in past albums, we know that whenever Derek talks about things like that, he does it from a more generalized point of view so that anybody listening to the song can truly identify with that. Really, that's honestly my only critique, the lyrics, because, again, as with the Heaven side, the music was just super killer. There wasn't a moment where...
Was there no filler?
None. Absolutely none.
I had to.
But yeah, you know, there's not really much for me to criticize on the Hell side either. In terms of my least favorite, again, hard to pick one, especially on the Hell side. But if I have to pick one, it would have to be House of Liars, only because... Like with Radio Silence, I feel like this song actually would have belonged more on the Heaven side than on the Hell side.
Okay.
I guess it's because it feels like it's a great song. Don't get me wrong. Great song, very experimental, very elegant, especially with that piano. But by the same token, it feels a little out of place on the Hell side. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could have been better on the Heaven side. But great song. I still love it. But it's my personal least favorite on the house side. But what about you? What were some of the things that you didn't like about the house side, if there were any? And what's your least favorite song?
Okay, so before I get into my critiques on the house side and my least favorite, I do want to point this out because I feel like it'll be the elephant in the room type of situation if we don't acknowledge it. They put Paint It Black, which is a Rolling Stones cover, on the Hell side, and I see everybody in uproar. Why would you put a cover? It was a wasted spot on the Hell side. Doesn't belong on this album. All these things, right? And I have to say that the people that are critiquing this and complaining about this, I completely and utterly disagree with that notion, and I'll tell you why. It's not even because the cover itself, I think, is a great cover and really puts a different spin on the original Rolling Stone song, but more so the fact that anybody that's a true Sum 41 fan, especially diehard fans, knows that when you go to see them in concert, which I have several times by this point, whether that be Rolling Stones, Metallica, they always throw covers into their set. And to have a final send-off of a double album and to really give justice to their entire career and everything that they've done up until this point, I think that it was a great idea, actually, to put a cover on this record. they're always paying homage to their influences that they both grew up listening to and currently listen to. And clearly, when you hear the bands that are some of their favorites, you can hear elements of that within their own music. And because of that, I understand why they wanted to throw that on here. And I see it's very divisive, and mostly a lot of criticism has come from it, from placing a cover on the final version of the studio album, their last work ever. But to me, that made sense because it wouldn't feel complete without a Sum 41 cover. And the fact that they chose Rolling Stones' Paint It Black, one of the most famous Stones songs, and really gave the song justice, put their own spin and their own grit and rawness to it as Sum 41, I think they did a great job.
Yeah, I 100% agree. First of all, I've always personally thought that Paint It Black is one of the more dark songs in the Rolling Stones catalog. And I've always thought that if someone were to do like a heavier version of it, it would translate well. I'm glad to see that I was right, because the song itself is dark enough as it is. It just kind of feels like a natural progression to, you know, give it a little bit more of a boost with heavier guitars. And I 100% agree with what you said. You know, the both of us have known since our earliest days of listening to Sum 41 that they are no strangers to covers, and that they obviously made it obvious to their listeners where their influences come from. They even said it on Fat Lip, you know, that they loved Iron Maiden and Judas Priest growing up. So they're not at all shy about revealing where their sound comes from. It's not a big secret. And by itself, the song sounds really good. I think Derek sang it very well. The band played it very well. And even the title of the album, as any heavy metal fan knows, is a tribute to Black Sabbath, because Black Sabbath has an album called Heaven and Hell. So honestly, the album is, you know, it's not just full of references to themselves, but it's full of references to their influences as well. So I agree with you that I disagree with everybody else.
I'm glad.
Everybody else giving them criticism for this.
Yeah, I'm glad that at least both you and I are on the same page about this. And I wanted to acknowledge that before getting into how I feel about the Hell side, because I just feel like it should be acknowledged. You guys don't have to agree with us listening to it, but I personally don't understand the level of disdain for this cover and why it's on this record. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. And really great point, by the way. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you. All right, so moving on to my actual criticisms of the Hell side, which are few and far between. So two tracks that really stuck out to me in not the best way was I Don't Need Anyone and You Wanted War. Sonically, I absolutely love these tracks, but lyrically, to me, felt extremely lacking. I Don't Need Anyone didn't really speak to me lyrically in any type of way. And then you have You Wanted War, which sonically I absolutely loved. And honestly, I could put the lyrics aside, as you said earlier in this episode about other tracks. I could put the lyrics to the side just because of how much this song kicks ass sonically. But if we're being honest with ourselves here, and if I were to give a truly authentic critique, it would be that lyrically You Wanted War is just super generic, and I feel like any band could have written those lyrics and put that out there. So with that being said, for some critiques, my least favorite song off of the Hell side would have to be It's All Me. And I actually found out that It's All Me was a B-side / scrapped track that was supposed to be on Chuck, that Derek pointed out to listeners when talking about this new record. It was during the Chuck era that the creation of this track was developed. But It's All Me does absolutely nothing for me. I'm glad that it didn't make Chuck at the time. It's a shame that it made it on this record, because I think it could have took a spot of a way better song. Between the screaming and the distortedness of it sonically, to me, I could really do without this song, and that's why it made my least favorite.
Listen, I think that's totally valid. I personally do love that song, but I can certainly see where you're going with it. I can certainly understand why the distortion of it could wear on people after a while. So that's a valid point. And as for the lyrics to the other songs, yeah, it's like I said, some of these lyrics are great, but then others, they are either forgettable or they just kind of bleed into each other and it gets dull at times. And, unfortunately, you kind of start thinking to yourself, what was Derek thinking when he wrote this? Or he could have written this a different way to make it a little more exciting. But like I said, because the music is so good, the lyrics or the lack of interesting lyrics is something that I can forgive and can overlook because the whole package is it's more often than not a really worthy listen.
And then going into some of our favorites, some of my personal favorites are Interlude, Rise Up, Combination, Stranger in These Times, Kicks Ass. I absolutely love that song. Actually, both lyrically and sonically, I think they nailed it with that one. Over the Edge, that's another one of my favorites. That's the top three for me. I can listen to that song on repeat. And also House of Liars, I know it was made your least favorite, but for me this sounded like a track straight off of Screaming Bloody Murder, and it has like that alternative grit to it. Absolutely love that track as well. I want to point out too the ending combination of Over the Edge going into House of Liars. Thought that was a great touch, another really nice touch on this side of the record on the Hillside. And yeah, so I love the 1-2 combo of those songs. And to close it out, I really enjoy the track How the End Begins. So I have to say, on both sides, I am a big fan of the intros and the closing songs of each side of this double album.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of my favorites, definitely a lot of overlap between us. For sure, Prepara si a salire. The intro is just so well done, so good. I agree with you. Would have been cool to hear more of that. Definitely Rise Up, Stranger in These Times, Over the Edge, You Wanted War. And of course, like I said, Over the Edge has that Kill 'Em All style riff, which just absolutely makes my heart sing. I love
Such a good track.
so good. You Wanted War, that galloping rhythm that the whole band is on, Dave Brown sound and Tom just wailing away on the guitars, just so
Yes,
fantastic.
hearing Dave on the front half and then hearing Tom on the back half and their different styles and how they complement each other in one track. Excellent. So freaking good.
Yeah, quite honestly, I think that they gave me the guitar album, the guitar send-off that I really wanted to hear from them. So I'm super, super happy on that front. Painted Black, I mean, it's a classic by itself, but I love their version of it. It's All Me. I know it made your least favorite, but I personally really loved it. And even though I hate the meaning behind the song, How the End Begins is also one of my favorites, but it's,
What a way to go. What a way to go.
yeah, what a way to go. It's so bittersweet because they're essentially making a declaration that it's over, that this is the end of the road, but it is a really great song and it's a fantastic way to end the album. Oh man, just so many
Yeah.
emotions, so many emotions. Oh my God.
It hasn't even fully hit me yet. I think that it's going to take us going to see them in concert for it to really, after that show is done, for it to really hit me. And who knows, maybe not even then. Maybe when they finally hang it up, whenever their last official show is, and then that's it. Maybe it'll hit me then. It's hard to tell between now and then, but I will say that this was very much an emotional experience listening to both sides of this record and just knowing that this is how the end begins, unfortunately. Bittersweet, bittersweet.
And I'm glad you mentioned that point because, yes, it's true. You and I are going to see them live, and we'll absolutely talk about that. So we don't want any of you guys missing that episode. And yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, it hasn't hit me yet because we haven't gone to see them live yet, And even when we've walked out of the venue and gone home, I really don't know whether it really will register with me. And yeah, it's just going to be such a roller coaster of emotions, way more than listening to this album ever was. And honestly, like kind of like I said with the Scorpion album by Drake, they could have given us 40 songs on this album and I would have listened to every last one of them. Oh
Yeah,
my
to be
God.
honest with you, I think they did such an excellent job of paying tribute to their entire career. This really was a career-spanning record, both on the Heaven side and the Hell side. You get elements of all of their previous work, which is truly incredible, and with new experimentation at that as well. And to create a double album that clocks in at under an hour, and to have people listen to it and be engaged throughout is truly no small feat. So shout out to Sum 41 putting their blood, sweat, and tears and just bearing their soul and basically what they have left to give on this record.
For real. I mean, I think it's safe to say that when most bands start out, they kind of say to themselves, you know, we'll be lucky if we're even around longer than a year. And the fact that these guys managed to not only stick around for so many years, but to put out such a solid body of work, and then to do the one thing that most bands dream of, which is to actually be able to, create a conclusion to their band's lifespan. I mean, I can't think of a better way to end a journey than the way they're ending it. So shout out to them, and oh my God, just thank you so much for all the music, man.
So before we close this episode out, Eric, I want to know your overall rating of Heaven and Hell, both sides, the whole album in its entirety. What would you rate this record, Sum 41's final studio album, out of 5 stars?
So I would rate it a 4 to 4.5 stars.
I am pretty much right there with you. I'm going to, for now, give it a 4 out of 5 stars because there are critiques within there. But the replay factor seems super high. So between now and the end of the year, it really could go up to a 4.5. So you and I are definitely on the same wavelength there.
Yeah, definitely. And that's exactly why I gave it the rating I did too, because there are some things that I felt could have been a little bit better on this album, but it's exactly like you said, the replay factor is super high. I've been replaying both sides back to back on repeat, just nonstop, and I'm gonna keep doing that until, you know, the day we go see them in concert and beyond. So yeah, I'm also glad to hear that we're on the same page. And let me just say, this was such a bittersweet but super fun topic to discuss with you on today's episode.
Yeah, super fun. This band is a band that we hold near and dear to our hearts. Eric and I have bonded over Sum 41 for many years now, and we absolutely love their body of work and everything that they've done, especially now with their last album. So if this is how they're going out, it's safe to say that they are going out on a high note, and we love and respect them for that, and we thank them for everything that they have done. And don't worry, guys, we'll get more into our feelings on the episode of the concert. But until then, just know that we have nothing but love, appreciation, and admiration for this band.
Yeah, 100%. And quite honestly, I can't think of anybody else that I would see this conclusion with than you, because you're, you know, the biggest Sum 41 fan I know. And listen, for anybody else who is going to the Brooklyn show, we can't wait to see you there and just, you know, celebrate the ending with you guys.
Yeah, I absolutely cannot wait. If any of you guys that are listening to this episode are going to the Brooklyn show in New York on May 5th, we will be there. Come over, say hi. Let's sing our hearts out. Let's give it one last good go around for Sum 41. That's the least that we can do as fans. And for those who are listening, who are going on the tour in general, I hope you all have a blast. I hope you make incredible memories with your friends, family, significant others, whoever you may be going with. And with all of that being said, you guys, we want to know how you felt about Sum 41's 8th and final studio album, Heaven and Hell, the Heaven side, pop punk, the Hell side, heavy metal. Ultimately, we want to know which side that you preferred, what are some of your favorite tracks from each side. So make sure you head on over to musicmattersmedia.com and let us know over there. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Music Matters Media. And as always, you guys, we will see ya in the next one.